Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The last time we visited with Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles was back in May, but summer vacation is over. Things are getting back to business. That means the mayor has returned to talk to us about any number of issues facing council and the city, including the recent decision to buy the tracks for the Red Line, continued discussions on how and when to ask the legislature for permission to put a 1 cent sales tax to support transit on next year's ballot, and council's vote this week to dedicate $11 million more to a sports complex at Eastland Yards. There's more, and the mayor is here to share her thoughts on all of these things and probably more. Welcome back to the program, Mayor Vi Lyles. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, Mike. Thanks for having me again, and good morning to your listening audience.
At the end of the show in May, you said, see you in September. I thought you were just singing a song, but clearly that was not really, that was a prediction.
I can't be in Charlotte squawks, you know. That's I have no singing voice in this woman.
So let's start this morning with the passing of longtime State Representative Kelly Alexander. He served in the legislature representing Charlotte, was also the president at one point of the state NAACP. He was on this program several times in the past, but you knew him. Talk about him.
Well, it's really special because I think that Kelly, as a legislator, as a business person, always had this idea around it was in his DNA, civil rights. Between his Uncle Fred and his dad Kelly, that family is iconic for what we believe in equity and inclusion. And it wasn't easy because you know that there was all kinds of difficulties, bombing of houses that they owned and lived in, but they persevered and they never gave up. And Kelly inherited from his dad, I think, the value system that the NAACP and all of these organizations that were doing civil rights embraced. I knew Kelly. He and I went to the same graduate program at Chapel Hill, the Masters of Public Administration. He was very successful in that program. He's a few years older than I am. And I remember the last time I was in Raleigh, we were going up to visit the legislators. And this is where we went into Kelly's office. And Kelly was reading a book. I mean, this is like just a few months ago, reading a book. And it was about history. And he continued to always be informed. He continued to operate a business, but he looked for the work that he could do to lead people in the opportunities that we can only imagine that we should have today. His business, I mean, I think you have to remember, they had a business for the longest time, and you can only imagine how many people they served, and as well, how many people that they served at no cost, because they had that kind of legacy and opportunity. So we're going to miss Kelly. He was thoughtful, he was well-read, he was well-spoken, and someone that we were all proud to know of.
And you mentioned he and his father and his family were dedicated to the ideals of civil rights. He did follow in his father's footsteps in that venue. He also pushed, as a legislator, he pushed the state to provide compensation for the victims of the state-sponsored eugenics law, which a lot of people don't know anything about. But this law was in place from 1929 until 1976. How did he help those remaining victims of that law?
You know, Mike, you're talking about probably one of the ugliest things that our government could ever do is to take women into women of color into and decide that they will not have children and that there would be these operations and just the policy part of it. And what Kelly did was acknowledge it. He brought it to the front of what we do and who we are. And that began to change a number of things in our city and county. And as well, it provided and recognition that people Who went through this very difficult issue of, you know, operations and things like that. He made it possible for people to understand that this was wrong and there was compensation for it. And I think just really acknowledging ugliness sometimes is a good thing to teach people to move forward.
And another thing that he fought pretty hard for, not successfully yet, but he was on the show talking about it many times, and that was, believe it or not, working to get the General Assembly to legalize cannabis. He said that of all the issues that he had been associated with over his time in public office, that was the one that people wanted to talk about. He didn't say what they wanted to talk about with regard to it, but they wanted to talk about it. Was he ahead of the curve on this issue?
Oh, absolutely right. I mean, you just read about what's going on with cannabis in our state right now, how cannabis is being approved and adopted in all of the areas of our community. I think DC, you think about the Cherokee and all of that. He was way ahead of it. I don't know quite why he was that far ahead of it, but I am sure that at some point in the next generation, cannabis will be something that's easily accessible to people who need it.
And although we had him on this program many times to talk about those efforts, which he would renew year after year after year in Raleigh, the last time he was on, he was here to talk about the aftermath of the murder by police in Minneapolis of George Floyd. And at the time, there were all these calls from various circles to defund the police. Kelly Alexander had a different response.
It's incumbent upon all of us to do what we can to make sure that things don't go back, that we learn from this present moment and we move ahead to try to improve things. This whole discussion, for instance, about quote, defunding the police, is really a discussion about what law enforcement ought to look like, how it should relate to the broader community, whether or not we should be looking at police as guardians or as warriors. I think the guardian model makes more sense.
Do you know, and maybe you don't, but do you know if his ideas on this filtered down to CMPD?
Absolutely. Kelly, hearing his voice, thank you for playing that clip, Mike. I want to say that he understood that when we were talking about defund the police, I'm not quite sure where that came, but if you'll recall, we actually created in the city of Charlotte with CMPD an arrangement with people that could come in and talk about what does the guardian model look like? How do we make sure the police are integrated with the people in our community? And the city of Charlotte's practice changed really a great deal to acknowledge that we had done some things that perhaps we did have too much of a kind of an expression of, you know, not being a guardian, but being a control. And the Charlotte City Council worked through a number of initiatives and came up with a new policy. And I think that policy still lives with us today. And Kelly's introduction, it was never about defunding the police. It was about how to make sure police are really effective and integrated in our communities.
I have another clip up my sleeve for you this morning. He was speaking on that program that we just heard the clip from directly about all the marches that sprang up and went on for weeks, if you recall, of protesting the murder of George Floyd. But he was kind of the adult in the room in all of this, because he used those protests as an example, as a model of how to civically engage, but he urged taking it to a different level.
If you believe that some of these changes are necessary, it's time for you to not only just march in the street, but to reach out to those people who can make a difference and change these things. You got to communicate with your legislators. You've got to communicate with your folk in Congress. You've got to communicate with your senators. You got to express what you believe as a citizen should be the new norm. If you fail to do that, we're going to get not anything that's new, but simply a modified version of the status quo.
Kelly Alexander Jr., he died last Friday at the age of 75. Any final thoughts about his legacy or his contributions before we move on?
I think that as we want to first say, you know, to his family, we will miss him. You know, sometimes people that actually have the ability to speak the truth, sometimes we forget about that. And what Kelly did was speak the truth. And he did it in a way that was non-threatening, but also firm enough to say, this is the way we have a choice that we have, and we should make better choices. So I say this to all of his family, that we know that he is going to be laid to rest on, I believe the day is his service is going to be at St. Paul Baptist Church. And I expect there will be lines of people to say goodbye to him. That's how well he knew this community and how well he served this community.
Well, let's move on to some civic things that are going on right now. And a lot of things have been happening in the last several weeks. Last week, Charlotte City Council opened their pocketbook. They voted to spend $91 million to buy Norfolk Southern's O-line tracks for the Red Line commuter train to Davidson and eventually beyond, although that will require some more money. After years, and we've talked about this forever now, but after years of saying no to using these tracks, Norfolk Southern suddenly said, yes, not only can you use them, we will sell them to you, but they put a deadline on the closing the deal, which was the day after council voted the $91 million to buy it. After waiting so long, no one has ever explained the urgency of this deadline. Why did they do it that way?
So, you said that it was like urgent and they finally let it do. We've been talking with Norfolk Southern for over 3 years.
Right.
So this didn't come as a sudden effort. It was an investment of time and effort. I recall when we had the first meeting with their CEO, and they were moving from Norfolk to Atlanta. They were building a new building. They were going to, you know, have a major presence in Atlanta. But we had these conversations for multiple years and days and time to talk about, one, what we need to have for our own city to have growth. We recognize that we have to continue to provide infrastructure that allows people to get to work and to get to home. All of this was something that the city council adopted as strategic focus. How do we deal with transportation? And we didn't have many options, but once Norfolk Southern decided that they would allow for us to purchase this, it was something that really changed our ability to think about transportation, infrastructure, and particularly about the growth in the city. I've read a letter recently from Davison Mayor and Rusty Knox, Huntersville's Mayor Christy Clark, and Woody Washington Cornelius. And they talked to their constituents about the number of years that went by that we didn't do anything. And now we have something that we can do that really helps with the northern towns, really allows for us to make an investment in growth along our initiatives that we have for infrastructure. So It's not a sudden thing. It's something that we really
right.
worked hard on.
But they put a deadline on it, and the deadline was the day after the vote. Do you understand why they said we have to have your decision by this date firm? I have 20 seconds.
I think that they gave us the deadline. We knew that deadline, and we chose when we made the vote.
Okay. I'm not sure that answers the question, but okay. We're here with Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles. More to talk about with regard to that and many other topics, including a new body for our transportation system and Eastland Yards. Another vote on that. We're coming right back. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaOfSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles. We were talking just before the break about the council vote to buy the O-line tracks from Norfolk Southern to put the Red Line commuter train to Davidson on. The vote on council was 10-1. Republican Tariq Bakari was the lone no vote. He was reluctant, because he was worried about taxes.
The thought of raising taxes in our current economy on the heels of just having raised taxes.
And of course, he's referring to the recent property tax increase by both the city and the county, and also the 1 cent sales tax for transit that will be necessary to build out this transit system for the transit plan. But that sales tax has not been approved. It's way far away from being approved. It may not be approved. But if we were given the go-ahead to put that sales tax referendum on the ballot, not this November, but next November, Mayor, how do you think voters would react to it?
I think, as you say, that it will take some time for us. We have to get through the state legislature, and then we'll have to ask the public if they agree with the idea of building a better transit system for this community. When you think about what we're trying to accomplish, it's strategic because we have to have the ability to move people around. And why is that important? One, people need to have jobs. I talk about this often when I meet people that say, I couldn't get to work because I have no car. I can't afford a car. You know, transportation and infrastructure and growth all make it possible for us to have a better community, a better place for people to be thrive and have homes and jobs. All of these things are about serving our residents that we can have this kind of investment.
And you and I have talked about this for a long time on and off on this program. And this transit plan, the original transit plan, was created, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, in the 90s. This thing has been around for years. And it was originally envisioned to be a system of rail that traversed the county, five different lines going throughout Mecklenburg County and into the surrounding counties. The new plan is not that. And that's primarily because the legislature, or leaders in the legislature, said it's too rail-centric, it needs to be more road-centric. That goes directly against what you just talked about. If people don't have cars, they don't need roads. They need other forms of transportation. So will this new plan, as it is presently configured, achieve the goals that you're setting out to achieve?
I think that we're going to have some time to do this. First, I mean, you know, when we talk about this, we're in a position to actually look and review the transit plan, and it hasn't been updated. We don't know what's, and one of the things that Bakari often talks to us about is what is technology going to be like in the future? So we're going to have some time to deal with this and the technology of what we're doing and seeing how this community, the residents, the voters in this town believe that we can have a better plan. I want to say thanks to Ed Driggs and Lee Altman, who shared this information, I think, with you on a longer conversation that I listened to. I always listen to you, Mike. I want you to know that. And so what we were doing is really trying to figure out what is the new system plan going to be? How do we take advantage of the federal funding? How do we take advantage of what might be technology to do this? And to give the residents the time to really focus on what do we do to make their lives better and easier?
So what I just heard you say may shock a lot of people, if I heard it correctly, and that is that we don't really have a plan because the old plan is out the window. The new plan is supposed to... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No,
is
go
that
ahead.
Correct? Well, the new plan is less focused on rail. And in fact, we had to cut part of the silver line to make the red line happen. And now we have the red line, the blue line, and a piece of the silver line in a plan that really isn't set in stone and may not be for a while through negotiations with the legislature. But we just spent $91 million to... buy the O-line tracks to put the red line commuter train on. If council is counting on that tax to refill the coffers to $91 million, what happens if the legislature says, no, we're not going to let you have a referendum, or if the voters say no to the referendum? What happens then?
I'm going to channel council member Ed Driggs. You know, when he talks about this, there is a risk factor to it. And what he has said consistently and what the council has heard from the discussions that we had about how we do this is that if we don't get the voters' approval, we will have some opportunity to come back. I think it's a reasonable risk, I think, as Ed would always say about that, that we believe that if in the next 2 years that we have the opportunity to showcase what we're doing with a plan that's new and updated to the technology and the purposes that we have right now for infrastructure, then I think we'll be okay. But if it's not, we understand that we took a really good swing at the bat, and hopefully we get a home run.
So put that risk into perspective, because to a lot of people, $91 million, although in comparison to what the whole transit plan would cost, it's nothing, but $91 million sounds like a lot of money. Well, you could buy a house on Lake Norman for that.
Are you sure about that, Mike?
No, I'm not.
Are you sure you can get it for $90 million? I'm not so sure. I saw something like, ooh.
So put that into perspective for people. How much money is that to the city of Charlotte?
Oh, my gosh. Now, you know, I used to be a budget director, and I kept up with all that, and I became mayor, and I'm not sure that I could tell you what portion of $90 million is our capital program. You got me on that one. But
okay,
I would
right.
say that this city has developed an infrastructure plan that this tax will help support, and it's going to be more than just the train. It's going to be around how do we connect roads to the train, to the job centers that we have so that people can work.
Had we had our way and the legislature with no strings attached said, go ahead, do your referendum, see what happens, we would have had the red line. We would have had the silver line. We probably would have had some sort of an expansion of the streetcar, although that's up in the air. Maybe an expansion of the blue line a little bit. Now, this is not going to happen now because they want this to be road-centric and not rail-centric, and there's only so much money to go around. So how do you feel as the mayor of Charlotte? How do members of council feel as people that we elect to represent us who live here about people who don't live here making these decisions for us?
You know that I said when we were talking about Kelly, we went to the same master's program in public administration. And so North Carolina has laws that govern how cities can operate and be successful. And sometimes that I think we forget that a lot of this is, you know, just our history of how do we include the state in what we're doing. We haven't advanced or changed
a
lot of that effort.
Mayor, from the point of view of the mayor and members of council, why do we need the state to chime in on this? They want to be part of, and we'll talk about this, the new oversight board that will oversee transit. They want to name people to that board. Why?
Well, one, I believe that what we're trying to do is not just say, why does the legislator want to do this now? But I think that we're looking longer term at having a regional system. And so a regional system is what requires opportunities for everyone. We have been working with a lot more people than Cornelius and Davison and Huntersville. We've been talking about how do we go to Eli Lilly and make jobs opportunities for trains and a way for people to get there. So I think that when we're talking about this, it's not just about Charlotte. I mean, certainly isn't about just the mayor. It is about a regional, thinking long-term, 20 years out. We want to make sure that people that are going to be in our community and the growth that we're having, that we're including everyone. And I think that that's appropriate.
Okay. The purchase of these tracks solves one problem, and it creates another. And you, as the mayor of Charlotte, served for a long time as the head of the Metropolitan Transit Commission. You know the realities of that organization. You know the politics. And the leaders of the northern towns said they were going to urge their constituents to vote no on any transit tax hike if they didn't get the red line. Now they've got it. They've approved it. They're going to say, okay, vote yes. But the folks in Matthews are really ticked off, and they're saying, no, we're not going to support this. Because they're going to get, instead of the silver line, likely, although they may get it, but likely they will get bus rapid transit, or BRT. And your colleague John Higdon, who's the mayor of Matthews, was on that program that you referenced a couple of weeks ago. He essentially says, that dog won't hunt.
I find it somewhat ironic that everybody in the county that's telling me how great BRT is going to be are getting trains. And they're telling Matthews and East Charlotte to be happy with BRT. BRT has not been built successfully in North America anywhere. The closest is Cleveland, Ohio, and they scored a 63 out of 100 from the Institute of Transportation and Development Policy ratings.
So what's your response to that?
You know, Mayor Higdon is really supporting his community, and he is actually dealing with the realities that we couldn't afford to do everything at once. So we have to figure out how to get a new plan that is financially appropriate for what we want to do. And I hope that Matthews will continue to talk to us about how this works for them. But a new plan, it's going to take a while to get it done. But we aren't dropping off everything that we want to do. We just want to make the investments that we can incrementally so that we can continue to have the kind of growth management that we want to have.
Of course, John Higdon is not the only person who said this is not a good idea, particularly
That's
for Matthews.
True.
Their entire town commission voted no on this, and he says that the impact will spread out throughout much of East Charlotte, which would have benefited both in terms of transportation and the development from a Silver Line train. And Ed Driggs was on that program. Republican Councilman Ed Driggs was on it. He pushed back on the idea that putting bus rapid transit to Matthews is not a good idea.
Understand that something is better than nothing. It would be too bad to kind of deny this entire process because it doesn't live up to the hopes and expectations, even though, in my mind, it has a lot to offer.
Of course, to do any of this requires that 1 cent sales tax for transit, which has to be approved by the legislature, put on a ballot next November, not this November, next November, and then voted on by citizens. Where do the discussions with the legislature to encourage them to consider allowing us to have a referendum stand?
I believe that we have had a number of people in this effort to help us talk with the legislature and to give them an overview, because this can't just be about a sales tax. It has to be about why and the what and how we can get it done. And so I believe that the work that we were doing in presenting to the legislature's representative of both our elected officials across the board as well as our business community, because I want our business community to think about where people can be and how can we continue to give opportunity. It's really about how do we make sure that Raleigh understands this gives us the ability to invest and plan for being a city that we can all be proud of. And hopefully they get that through both our elected officials, our delegation, as well as our business community.
So these talks have been on again, off again, sometimes, I guess, official, sometimes unofficial, just to contacts that you have with other lawmakers. How would you characterize the nature of these discussions, and has any progress been made since last we spoke in May or even February when you were on the program and we talked about this?
Well, I think by having the city council have a unanimous vote to go to to acquire the rail says a lot. The council members really understood that this was an opportunity that we had pretty much one time. Norfolk Southern wasn't going to say, well, we'll give you another, 3 years to do this. They've been working with us. We've got the amount of money that we needed to. We've recognized what we needed to do and what to purchase. And the council worked really hard and presented it in a way that addressed so many of the issues that we've talked about as a strategic purpose of our community. What is government supposed to do to help our people invest in themselves and thrive? And I think that that's really what will make a difference, is that we've worked a long time with this, and these boards and across the county footprint, we have the support, and I think that's going to make a difference.
So part of this new plan, as we alluded to a moment ago, the one that council voted to support, in addition to passing the $91 million to buy the Red Line, they voted to support a proposed bill that has been drafted for the legislature that would not only authorize a sales tax referendum, if the legislature acts on it, it would remake the Metropolitan Transit Commission and completely change the management of CATS. This legislation would establish, as I understand it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, a regional transit authority, which you've referred to, with one governing board, combining the roles of today's Transit Commission and the City of Charlotte. It would be a 27-member body. Seems a little unwieldy to me, but 27 members, 12 from Charlotte, with three of those representing business interests in the city, 12 from Mecklenburg County, with six of those from the various towns that surround Charlotte, one member appointed by the governor, one member appointed by the State House of Representatives, one member appointed by the State Senate. Is this a good idea? That's a lot of people, a lot of different interests, many of whom do not live here, do not understand our needs or concerns, and many of whom who do not live here and don't understand don't care.
Well, I think that, one, I don't know that we can say that many do not live here. They may not serve in the same place. Their workplace might be in Raleigh, but I think that we can have people that live in our community. I mean, we've got some terrific elected officials in Raleigh that live in our county and our region. This isn't unique to Charlotte. When you build a regional transportation system, and when you're talking about that, you need to invite the people that are going to be invested in it. So those representatives,
But the region doesn't extend to Jones Street. It doesn't extend to Wake County. So to have a member of the House, or the House appoint a member, or have the Senate appoint a member, to have the governor appoint a member, doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me.
But the member, yes, they will make those appointments, but that doesn't mean that those people that are appointed don't live here in Charlotte or have an opportunity to live in the region where we're trying to build out a transportation system. I mean, Gaston, I mean, you think about Belmont, all of these people, there are people that care just like we do in this community for transportation options that make it possible for folks to be able to thrive in their communities. And so it could be Kramer Mountain, all of that. So I think we shouldn't assume that these are people that don't care deeply about the value of adequate transportation.
There are other ways to achieve that, it seems to me. We'll move on when we come back, and that would be taking a look at another vote that council voted on, and it's another big chunk of money being spent, this time for Eastland Yards. We'll talk about that in a moment, the Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. We're talking with Mayor Vi Lyles about various issues that the city's been involved in over the past several months since she's been here last, back in May. We're going to move on to the Eastland Yards vote, because on Monday, the City Council voted to approve spending an additional $11.3 million to redevelop a portion of the old Eastland Mall site into a sports complex. Council voted last year to spend $30 million on this same project. This is the second time that developers have been to the well. Will it be the last?
That is a great question. The expectation is this will be the development that we chose to fund and support. And I think we have to start off, remember, it's Eastland Yards isn't just about the sports complex. We have affordable housing, we have retail space, and what we're doing is actually creating this amenity. If you listen to the council members again, with a unanimous vote to invest in this effort, it was really about how do we talk about places that people can go, how do we participate in opportunities for people. And the project is going to have both economic, social, and something about amateur sports that we have needed for a very long time. I recall years ago, we talked about perhaps having a sports complex and a motel further down Independence Boulevard. And now we are looking at it and saying Eastland is the site that is best suited for this investment. And it's going to be, I think, absolutely one of the stars of our investment plans that we have, because people want to congregate. People, the habits that we have since COVID have completely changed. And so we have to figure out how to adjust. And I think that the planning that was done for the Eastland Yards was really important for us to do.
But,
and
the question was, last year they voted $30 million to support this project. This year they've come back to the well and they've asked for $11.3 million, and council said yes unanimously. Is this the last time they're going to come to the well? Is there any more money for this project should it be needed?
Well, I'm assuming that the infrastructure that's being done will be funded with, we've got a total investment of $90 million in that site. And that includes housing, retail, all of the activities that we have, as well as the sports complex.
But the sports complex is going to ultimately be privately owned and privately operated. How unusual, or usual for that matter, is it for the city to pump $41.3 million into a private venture?
Well, I don't think it's unusual to have an economic development effort. When we recruit a lot of new businesses and want to have people come in, new investments, this is not something that is unique. It is actually the way that government helps people move on, because it's not just that they're getting money, because they're going to have taxes that they're paying back to us as a result of this. Right now, as we sit and look at Eastland, the site, we're getting nothing in terms of this except, you know, there's no taxes, there's no ability. We think that, I believe all of the council believes that we can have something that will at some point pay it back, in terms of safety, in terms of taxes, in terms of a regional complex. I mean, there's a lot of conversation going on about how well we can do amateur sports, and how when you bring people in for basketball or soccer with kids, I know a lot of parents that spend a lot of money on this kind of activity. And I think doing this in Charlotte will pay us benefits in terms of our tax base, as well as making something positive to be on the east side.
Aside from they're paying taxes when it's up and running, are we guaranteed anything in terms of access for amateur sports that don't have a lot of money and can't afford to pay for the facilities, et cetera? Are they guaranteed to have access as part of this deal?
As we've had conversations about amateur sports, I can't see if we have something that's concrete that says this is what it will be. But I know parents sacrifice a lot to make sure that their kids have the opportunity in this world. Sports in this country, it's like a huge business now. And I'm not familiar with what they do, but I would say that I think a lot of people will invest in sports and amateur sports in Charlotte.
I'm not sure that answered the question, but okay. $8.9 million of this money is coming from the city's capital investment program, with an additional $2.3 million from the Convention Center Tax Fund. Not only were Economic Development Committee members on council not perturbed by these additional costs, council member Marjorie Molina was adamant in her support.
For me, that's a hell yes. And it's a resounding hell yes. And I'm asking for the favor of, you know, this committee to refer the conversation to a full council so that we can hold the discussion.
I was going to ask you, had you voted, because the mayor doesn't vote except to break ties, would it have been a hell yes from you too? But it sounds like it would have been from what you've been talking about here.
I follow Marjorie Molina in every place that she goes, and I always enjoy the way that she frames her work and her thoughts. And I think the hell yes was a really cool thing that she did.
So we've had a lot of discussions about this Eastland Yards project, because it's been going on forever, and the city seems to finally have figured out all the component pieces to this and have found a way to get it out of the ground and up and running. But there have been some wrenches thrown into the works, particularly with regard to the sports complex over the years. We don't need to go into details about that, but suffice it to say that it was going to be one thing and then it wasn't. So now it's going to be whatever this is going to be. But some people may ask, because $41 million of tax dollars went to this private entity, and a lot of people may be thinking, where do I apply? So what are the criteria for this kind of investment for the city to make in a private enterprise?
I would assume that when we talk about economic development and what we have to do, that we want new infrastructure. You remember with the housing there, we'll have senior housing and regular housing. We'll have opportunities for people to build out restaurants and retail and all of that. So I think that what we look for, at least what I look for in this community, is where can we go to build the best that we have to create opportunities for all of the people that we work with. And so I think it's going to be vibrant. I think it's going to be quality of life. I think it'll be regional. I think we'll get lots of visitors. But I think that way that we look at this, we looked at this pretty much like we looked at any other private corporation coming here, Honeywell, Lowe's, all of them. We do a lot of work in partnership because that's how government actually can create the things that you want to have. You know, nobody wants to come to Eastland and not have the ability to get something really fabulous to eat or buy something that they can take back as a souvenir. So this is no different. This economic, it may have taken a little bit longer, but this is no different than what we would do if any private sector came to us and said, can you help us in a way that provides opportunity for the people in this community?
So last night, we don't have the figures yet, but I'm sure they are enormous because it was the only presidential debate that is likely to occur between Vice President Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. And the last presidential debate in this cycle was groundbreaking. It resulted in Kamala Harris's candidacy. So I think a lot of people must have, millions, it was on every network. So millions of people watched this. What were your, as the politician in the room, as the Democrat in the room, what were your impressions of what you saw last night? I'm assuming that you watched it.
I did watch it. I want to tell you, I was a delegate for Kamala Harris at the convention that was held in Chicago. And I thought that she did an exceptional job there. Where she really did talk about who she was and how authentic she was and what she was doing. I think that she continued to do that last night. I think that she was on point. I think that she was gracious in some respects, that more gracious than I could have been. And I believe that she is going to, it's not going to be an easy race. We know in Charlotte-Mecklenburg, we talk a lot about how Sherry Beasley, if we had had two additional Democratic votes when Sherry Beasley was running for the state Supreme Court, we would have done okay. I think that what we have to do is talk to the people in this community and help them decide who they have a better investment in, Kamala Harris or Donald Trump.
So the transformation of spirit since among Democrats, since President Biden dropped out of this race and Vice President Harris ascended to the top of the ticket has been notable. Joy and enthusiasm, though, which are the two words that seem to be floating around about this, they only go so far. And what it boils down to is the winner being able to capture the battleground states that will ensure that they have enough electoral college votes to win. The polls remain, I believe, neck and neck, although she did get a bump among likely voters last night because of her debate performance. So are the polls right? Because you are out amongst Democrats, you are out amongst voters. Are they right? Or are you seeing something or feeling something or hearing something on the ground that would indicate the polls are not exactly right? They're perhaps more favorable toward Harris or Trump, for that matter, than the polls would tell us.
I can't speak to polling. I know that you have a number of people on your show often that can talk about how they do polling and whatever. But I do have to say that I am out in the community. We're talking about things like increasing opportunity sites for where people can go vote. So I want you to know that we have early voting sites that are going to start Very simple, and there will be more of them. The Board of Elections is working very hard to make sure that people have the ability to make their voices heard. So that's one thing, more voting sites for early voting and getting more people to the polls. And we are going to support that because this is an important election and we will have to work through any result. And it's going to be, I think, in Charlotte, just like other places, that we want to have an end of the voting cycle to be fair and effective and honest. And so we are investing in the ideas of how do we get people more to the polls? How do we get people to understand how important this election is?
Both candidates have spent a significant amount of time in North Carolina and even in Charlotte, because we are still considered a toss-up state, maybe not a battleground state necessarily, but our throwing our support one way or the other, it could make a difference for either of these candidates. Last week, Donald Trump was here to speak at a meeting of the Fraternal Order of Police. They gave him their endorsement. Daniel Redford, the president of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg FOP, told WFAE News that he was happy the group gave their full endorsement to Trump because, quote, he's been a strong proponent for law enforcement. Any comment?
I think in our city, we are all strong proponents for our police officers. CMPD is an exceptional department. We have one of the best chiefs in the country. I think that the officers will make their decisions on how they view this. We can have as many, conventions and everything, but at one point, once you close, get into that voting booth, it is your individual assessment of what you want to do.
But
and I can't project that.
Well, you speak with police all the time, certainly the heads of our CMPD department, and not all of them are necessarily in agreement with the Fraternal Order of Police in their endorsement, but these are police officers who came to Charlotte to throw their endorsement to a convicted felon who faces federal and state felony charges for attempting to overturn an election, a man who encouraged a mob to go to the Capitol where it was not a tourist visit. It got out of hand. People died. Hundreds of police officers were injured in that, and now he wants to pardon them. Does this make any sense to you at all?
I had the opportunity to hear how the vice president handled that. She acknowledged all of the things that you just said about Donald Trump. And so where are we in this process? We need to get people to understand the value of both people and assessment, and then they need to go vote.
Do you understand how a group of police officers who are sworn to uphold the law and who are sworn to protect the public and serve them legally can throw their support to a man who thwarts the rule of law? I'm going to put it out there. He's unfit for office.
Thank you for saying that.
I might lose this job because of saying that, but it's just apparent on the face of it. How do you explain this?
I'm sorry, Mike. I could not hear what the question was.
How do you explain it?
How do I explain Donald Trump?
No, the support for him from the Fraternal Order of Police.
I can't explain that there are a number, I can't tell you how many police associations there are, and we're just talking about just one of them. I don't know where those folks, where they live, what they're doing. But you just have to understand that there are going to be a lot of people that will support him, support Trump, just because they have a specific reason. But I hope that we will have the same kind of opportunity if people want to express what they support for the vice president. That's where we will get this out and done.
So because we're a toss-up state, the vice president will be back in Charlotte tomorrow, I believe, afternoon. Her location has not been disclosed yet, although she's holding a rally, so it seems a little late to be telling people where to go. Will you be with her?
Context for her, she is going to be at Bojangles Arena tomorrow.
Okay.
Probably later in the afternoon. And we're welcoming her. The governor and I will meet her on the tarmac to say thank you for coming to Charlotte.
And with that, we have to thank you for being on this program today. Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles, thanks again for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.